Screen Time with John Fardy. This is News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Screen Time. I'm John Fardy and this is News Talk's TV and movie show. This week on the show we talk Beverly Hills Cop Axel F., the new Beverly Hills Cop movie, Beverly Hills Cop 4, if you will, on Netflix. And I get to talk to Eddie Murphy, Kevin Bacon and Joseph Gordon-Levitt about the much-beloved franchise. We'll also be bringing you all the week's new cinema releases, which this week include A Quiet Place Day One, the latest version of A Quiet Place, Quiet Place 3, if you will, and the new Kevin Costner Western epic. I'm open on Twitter, John_Fardy, or you can email me screentime@newstalk.com. This show is available as a podcast every Friday at 5 p.m. on newstalk.com or the News Talk app powered by Go Loud. It's on the radio every Saturday at 6 p.m. here on News Talk. Good weekend to you all. I hope you're doing well and enjoyed some of that nice sunshine we were treated to for various parts of last week. I'm afraid to mention the weather now because it seems to be a mix all over the country. Anyway, so I hope you're well, and we have some great stars on the show this week that I spoke to during the week, which I'm very keen to bring you. But before I get to that, I want to talk to you briefly about TV and what I watched this week. I got a tip from a friend of mine. It's not always just listeners, sometimes it's friends. And my friend Paul, who said, have you watched Presumed Innocent on Apple TV? But now I have.
Now I will present evidence to show you that the accused committed this crime. And should you find that to be likely, you gotta vote not guilty. Should you find that to be very likely, you have to set him free. My job is to prove guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. And being on a jury, that is a high calling. And being entrusted with the prosecution, satisfying the burden of proof, that is also a high calling. I will live up to my duty. And I ask that you rise up to yours. Let's do our jobs.
Now that was Jake Gyllenhaal there, who plays a lawyer in Presumed Innocent. Presumed Innocent was a novel from 1987, and then Harrison Ford starred in the movie back in 1990. And this is a TV version of it. And it's very good so far. And in a way, I had the same experience of watching Ripley on Netflix a few months ago when you thought, what's the point of turning, you know, a 2-hour movie into a TV show over 7 or 9 parts? And then I saw Ripley and I thought, by God, that was a good idea. And the same with Presumed Innocent, because this is drip fed to us in a very pleasing way. So the basic idea, and you heard Jake Gyllenhaal there, is he is a lawyer and he's a very good one. And then his colleague is found murdered pretty horrifically. But what happens is it turns out he was having an affair with the same said colleague and he becomes a suspect in her murder. He's married to a great Ruth Negga in this. They've been having marital problems because he's having an affair. Why wouldn't you? And she is brilliant as his, you know, it's a cliche, long-suffering wife, but by golly, she is long-suffering in this. But what is great about this that I really like, as I mentioned there, the revelations are kind of drip-fed. Oh, he's having an affair. Oh, he was there the night she was murdered. Oh, I won't give you any more because you should watch it. They're dropping every week, which I think is often a good sign on Apple TV. There are 4 up there now and they're gripping TV, I have to say. And what's also great in it is Peter Skarsgård, the actor, plays the prosecuting lawyer in the case, and he's horrible. And he's horrible to Jake Gyllenhaal. And Jake Gyllenhaal is great in it because he seems like an ordinary American everyman, quite successful, married, supposedly happily with 2 children. And then we peel back the onion a bit. So I've really enjoyed Presumed Innocent so far. It's on Apple TV. Let me know if you might have been watching Presumed Innocent on Apple TV. John_Fardy is my Twitter handle, or you can email me screentime@newstalk.com. Now, let's get to this.
You sure y'all paying y'all's bills? Because this phone don't work.
This isn't my first time in Beverly Hills.
Yeah, I saw that. 84, 87, and then 94.
But this place has changed a bit.
What brings you back to 90210?
I got a call from Billy.
He's in trouble now.
What do you want from me?
I want you to be a cop again.
We gotta do something.
Axel, if you damage any city property,
you're in a snowplow?
Yeah, we're in a damn snowplow. What's the problem?
A lot of blind spots in a snowplow.
I'm on an undercover mission with Achwen von it.
You're pissing off a lot of people.
That means we're getting close. Y'all safe? Everybody safe?
There's no seatbelt in the middle.
What the hell with the seatbelt? We're on the edge!
Now that is a flavor of the new Beverly Hills Cop movie. You might call it Beverly Hills Cop 4. That's where it is in sequence. But this one is called Beverly Hills Cop Axel F. And it lands on Netflix on the 3rd of July. And Axel Foley is back. Eddie Murphy reprises the role of Detective Axel Foley. And he's back on the beat in Beverly Hills. When the movie begins, he's in Detroit after his daughter's life is threatened. She, played by Taylor Page, and Foley team up, even though there's a bit of tension between them for various reasons. And he teams up with a reluctant new partner, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. And he also meets his old pals, Billy Rosewood, the great Judge Reinhold, and John Taggart, John Ashton, who were the two original enemies who became friends of his in the first movies. And they turn up the heat and try to uncover a conspiracy that appears to be going on that may involve the cops. So look, this is 40 years after the original film broke box office records, sent the Hit Pack soundtrack to the top of the charts with all those songs like The Heat Is On and The Neutron Dance. And I suppose the original movies kind of helped invent that genre of, you know, action comedy, really, and certainly cemented Eddie Murphy's status as a kind of comedic movie superstar. And what's good about this one is that he's back, he's grown older, but it's still the Axel Foley getting into trouble in Beverly Hills Cop. You heard him stealing a snowplow there. And it's staying very loyal to the first one with a few modern flourishes. So it really works that well and keeps the beat with it, and was very familiar feeling and new as well. And it's an entertaining watch. And if you like the first and second one, I mean, the third one leaves a little to be desired. I still like it, but you're very much back in very pleasant Beverly Hills Cop territory. And I love this, I have to say. We also have Kevin Bacon playing a police captain, Cade Grant, in this, who may not be all that he seems. We'll get to him later. So Eddie Murphy, as I say, is back as Axel Foley in Beverly Hills Cop Axel F on Netflix. And I got to talk to him earlier in the week about it all. Eddie, hi, John Fardy from News Talk Radio in Dublin, Ireland.
What's going on, John? How are you?
I'm a massive fan since about the age of 10, so I'm losing all journalistic integrity by telling you that, but there you go. I have to say.
Sorry, you're probably 10. Now you weren't even, how old were you when Beverly Hills Cop, the first one, came out? You weren't even 10.
I was 10. I was 1985, wasn't it? Or 84. Cool. 84. I was nine. And listen, that's where I wanted to start, that this one, what I really like about it, it feels of the 1984 one, and yet it's modern. And I know you guys spent a long time wrestling with how to do the fourth one. Did you get the script and go, we've got it now?
Yeah, I did. I did. But the tone of the movie and the way the movie is came out, though, a lot of that has to go to Mark Molloy, the director. He's the one that makes it feel like he was such a big fan of the first movie. He wanted to connect the dots in a way to where, you know, you've kept having these feelings of nostalgia and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've kept the music, and it's great. I really liked it. Axel, I was saying to Joseph earlier, you know, Joseph is kind of the Renaissance cop, and he's in touch with his feelings, and Axel's more old school cop, but he's grown a bit as well. I think he's lived a life, and maybe he's a bit more than he was before, but you tell me.
Yeah, he's absolutely grown. When Axel first comes to town in 1984, Axel, when I made that movie, I'm 21 years old. And wow. This movie, I'm 61, 62 when I made it. So a lot has happened, and Axel's a whole different person.
Yeah, as are you, I guess. Just on that, like, I hope I'm not, you know, blowing smoke up your behind, but you look about 20 years younger than you are. You say you're 62. Yeah. Like, what's the secret? I mean, you've lived the life, you've had your ups and downs like we all have, but you look about 20 years younger than you are. Is there some, can you tell Ireland how you do it?
I don't know. Let me see. I don't have, I never drink. I can count the drinks I've had on one hand.
Oh, okay.
And I never smoked tobacco or anything like that. And I've had a least amount of stress. I got famous when I was 18, 19 years old. And, you know, so I haven't had a lot of stress. And I guess that's very little alcohol, no alcohol and very little stress. that's the key.
The Eddie Murphy diet to younger looks. Tell me this. There's a million films I could ask you about, but when you sing in movies, I always like it. And a lot of people rightly compliment you for singing in Dreamgirls. When you sang Roxanne in 48 Hours, I always remember that because we were big Police fans in Dublin as well as Eddie Murphy fans. And I said, you're looking 20 years younger. Do you think you can still hit Roxanne? Is that a song that if you had to in a karaoke bar, would you be able to hit that high note?
Oh, yeah, I can still hit those notes. I sing better now than I sang back then. I never stopped recording stuff. I stopped putting music out, but I still, you know, write and record and stuff. That's where I have my most fun doing music.
Yeah. You don't want to hit the high note Roxanne now, do you?
Oh, no, man. I've only been up about 2-3 hours. I can't hit that note till later on in the day.
I forgot it. I'm 8 hours ahead of you. Sorry about that. I'll call you back in 8 hours. Listen, lovely to talk to you, and thanks a million.
Nice talking to you too, bro.
Cheers. Bye-bye. Eddie Murphy there, refusing to sing Roxanne for me. Who did I think I was, eh? But anyway, and that was Eddie Murphy's only Irish interview for Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F. So I was delighted to get there. It was a short interview, but it was the great Eddie Murphy. And by the way, this is what I was talking about from 48 Hours.
Roxanne, you don't have to put on a red light. Those days are over. You don't have to say about it to the night. Roxanne.
That's him singing Roxanne that we just used. I just think was hilarious and also hitting the high notes at the time, but he refused to do them. But, you know, that's fine. And Axel F, as I say, Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F is on Netflix from next Wednesday, July 3rd, for your streaming pleasure. Now, after the break, more stars of the new Beverly Hills Cop in the form of Kevin Bacon and Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Now, you're welcome back to the second part of Screen Time. So before the break, I was talking to Eddie Murphy, and the stars of Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F, continue in the form of Kevin Bacon, who plays a cop, a police captain. He may not be all he seems, let's just say that. Plays a guy called Cade Grant in this. And I don't think Kevin Bacon needs an introduction. I didn't give Eddie Murphy one. I don't think I need to give Kevin Bacon one. He was on stage with Billy Joel in Madison Square Garden a while ago, and Billy Joel didn't give him an introduction. So why should I, right? So here's Kevin Bacon talking to me about his role in Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F, and maybe a bit about Billy Joel too. Kevin, John Fardy from News Talk Radio in Dublin, Ireland. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very well. Tell me this, you know, I'd say there's plenty of actors who have on their bucket list to be in a movie with Kevin Bacon. I'm wondering, for you, was being in an Eddie Murphy Beverly Hills Cop possibly on your bucket list as an actor? It may not have been, but...
Well, certainly to work with Eddie was on my bucket list, absolutely. Beverly Hills Cop, it never really had occurred to me that that would be the one. But when it came down the pike, I was like, well, first off, that's cool. Second off, Eddie's great. I really like the script. When I would talk to people about it, people would have a big smile on their face. The idea that, you know, not only that the movie was being made, but that there was a possibility that I would be in it. So, this seemed like a no brainer for me.
Yeah. It's funny you mention the smile on your face. I was thinking something about you as I was watching this, and I'm wondering if other people have said this to you over the years. You have a smile that's, it can mean a thousand things. It can, and you do it in this movie. Like, you could be about to become my best friend with that smile, or you might kill me. Have people mentioned your smile to you a lot over the years? Because actors have a thing, and I think your thing is your smile.
No, they haven't really. Not specifically, you know. And And it's funny because you use your face to act, but you really tell the story with your eyes. You know, that's one of the things I think about the camera, is that it goes past what we see with the naked eye. You know, you can be playing something that a director will say, well, I want a little bit more menace. And sometimes I want to say, wait until you see the dailies on it, because it's probably, you're probably not being able to see it with the naked eye, but it's there, because if you put it in your gut, that it comes out through your eyes. So that's part of the thing, where you can be smiling with your face, but your eyes are saying, I want to kill you.
Yeah.
Or they're saying, I love you. You know, there can be either one.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know better than me. They're your eyes and your smile. Listen, the last thing I would bring up in an interview with you is this game that's something to do with 6 degrees, right? However, and I'm not going to, you'll be pleased to hear, but I did watch your TED talk about it, and I want to say two things to you. I steal your line all the time, which is absolutely brilliant, where you say, Bob Dylan told me never to name drop. And I, on this show that you talk to me on, I say all the time, Bono told me never to name drop. But in a kind of weirdly related way, I claim to be Ireland's biggest Billy Joel fan. Uh-huh. It was the first concert I ever saw. And in a 6 degrees kind of way, you sang The Entertainer in Madison Square Garden only 4 months ago, and you ended with him. I presume that was a pretty awesome experience.
Yeah, you talked about bucket list. That's another bucket lister. But I don't even think of that as a bucket list item, because to me, bucket lists have to be things that you could actually imagine happening. And I never would have imagined that Billy would call me and say, hey, will you come sing The Entertainer at the Garden, you know, next week? Yeah. I mean, it was a great experience, and I was thrilled to do it. And I'm a big fan like you.
Yeah, well, you did a great job. It's been a good year for you, acting with Eddie and then singing with Billy, you know.
Absolutely.
And these things come in threes. I guess talking to me is probably, you know.
There you go. That's the hat trick.
Nice to meet you, Kevin.
You
continued
too.
Success.
All right. Thank you
Cheers.
Very much.
Kevin Bacon there, talking about, well, singing on stage with Billy Joel in Madison Square Garden, but more importantly, well, for the purposes of this show, talking about his role opposite Eddie Murphy in Beverly Hills Cop Axel F. And by the way, here's him singing on that aforementioned stage. He's not a bad singer. Sure he isn't. That was pretty good going. He can hold a tune. And the great Kevin Bacon there. Now, the stars continue from Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F, in the form of Joseph Gordon-Levitt. As I mentioned earlier, he plays Eddie Murphy's kind of reluctant new partner in this. He's a bit more of a new age cop, in the sense that he's not as old school, but he's still a pretty good cop to have as his partner. And he's kind of reluctantly teams up with Eddie Murphy's Axel Foley in this. Does Joseph Gordon-Levitt need an introduction? I mean, I didn't give Kevin Bacon or Eddie Murphy one. I mean, I'll just remind you that, you know, he was a child star. He was in A River Runs Through It. A lot of people know him from the great movie 500 Days of Summer. He was in Don John, Snowden. He was in John Carney's movie from last year, Flora and Son. A great actor. And he spoke to me earlier in the week about Beverly Hills Cop. Hi, John Fardy from News Talk Radio in Ireland. Joseph, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. How are you doing?
Great. I'm a big admirer of your work.
Thank you.
Tell me this. It strikes me your character is kind of not the anti-Axel, but he's a Renaissance cop. He's a bit more in touch with his better sides than maybe a traditional cop who just gets the job done. Or how do you see him in terms of that stuff?
Yeah, I actually think you said that really well. And I wanted to be someone who is formidable to the protagonist of the film series, because to me, that's how you keep it interesting. This is the fourth Beverly Hills Cop movie. Axel Foley, sort of his superpower, if you will, is that he can trick anybody into doing whatever he needs them to do to help him solve the case. So I wanted someone who's like, no, that's not going to work on me. You know, someone who's sort of emotionally intelligent enough to not be intimidated by, you know, Axel's attempts to play on his insecurities, et cetera. That's what, you know, kind of creates a more interesting back and forth, something different for the character.
Yeah, trying to slap away his charms, kind of.
Right.
Of which he is quite charming. Tell me this. You know, I was thinking about you in this movie and other things I've seen you in, and I'm wondering, has this come up? I know you've played all sorts of things, but you do sincerity very well. And I don't think it's just a physical thing. I mean, that's part of it. You have a sincere face, if that's not a weird thing to say. But have people remarked on that over your career, that you bring a kind of sincerity? I hope this doesn't sound like I'm blowing smoke up your behind, but I just mean, there's a sincerity to stuff that you do.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate that. And actually, I do think that that's a big part of what worked here in Beverly Hills Cop. And perhaps counterintuitively, I think it's a big part of why Eddie Murphy is such a great comedy actor, is because as big and bombastic as his comedy can be, there's always an honest human core, you could say, a sincerity to his performances. And so when we would do scenes together, I was always just trying to kind of throw back to him honesty, because we would improvise a lot. You know, he loves to improvise. And when he would improvise, my goal was not to reach for the punchline. My goal would always just be to respond in a realistic, honest, sincere, I guess you could say, fashion.
Yeah.
And he really liked that. And I think that would often bring out the other, you know, the most hilarious follow-ups.
Yeah, well, you did it in spades. In closing, then, I really enjoyed you in Flora and Son.
Yeah!
I spoke to John Carney last year.
Oh, nice.
You did a great version of I Hope That I Don't Fall in Love with You.
Thank you.
Is that a song you like? Because John said to me, you know, they had to ask Tom Waits for it, and we really didn't want to mess it up, and thankfully Joseph didn't mess it up. Is that a favorite song of yours, or was it one you'd heard before?
Yeah, I'm a big Tom Waits fan. Although I will say I'm more often listened to his like post Swordfish Trombones Kathy Brennan records, but I also like the early lounge era of Tom Waits, and it was an honor to get to sing that song. But it wasn't my idea; that was John's idea.
Okay, well, credit to him, but kudos to you for that, and indeed for Beverly Hills Cop, Axel Foley. Lovely to meet you, Joseph.
Thank you. Great to meet you, too. Cheers.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt there, talking about, well, Flora and Son, and singing Tom Waits, but more importantly, being in Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F., which is on Netflix from July 3rd. So we mentioned music in all those interviews, blame it on me, but they're all pretty good singers. And just to, you know, do the three of them. Here's Joseph Gordon-Levitt singing Tom Waits from the movie Flora and Son.
I hope that I don't fall in love with you. It's falling in love just makes me blue. Music plays and you display your heart for me to see. I had a beer and now I hear you calling out to me. And I hope that I don't fall in love with you.
He can hold a tune, that man. In fact, all three of them, Kevin Bacon, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and indeed Eddie Murphy, can hold a tune. So look, I better wrap it up there. And I'll just tell you again that Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F., is on Netflix from next Wednesday, July 3rd. And I found it very enjoyable and very much in keeping with the Beverly Hills Cop universe. So look, we'll leave it there. And thanks to the guys, my good pals, Kevin, Joseph and Eddie. After the break, we'll turn to the new cinema releases of the week, which include Kevin Costner's epic new Western. Now you're welcome back to Screen Time, and we turn now to the week's new cinema releases. Yes, where you go and see movies in the darkened room. Going to look at the new Kevin Costner Horizon American saga, A Quiet Place Day One, and if we have time, a weird movie called Kinds of Kindness. Delighted to be joined now by someone we haven't on the show in a long time, Brian Lloyd, editor of entertainment.ie. Brian, hello, sir. How are you?
How you doing?
So listen, Kevin Costner, there are four movies possibly in this American saga of his. It's been talked about for 30 years plus, it seems, or something like that. We finally have the first one, and the correct title is Horizon, an American Saga. What's going on?
It's actually, to correct you, it's Horizon American Saga Chapter 1. There you go.
Whoa, well, that's an important correction.
It is, and like, I mean, the reality of this is like, you know, Kevin Costner, I think, is one of these directors that, you know, he's able to, like, he's very earnest, you know, that sort of way. There's not a lot of kind of knowing. There's not a lot of cynicism in any of his work. Even in, like, this dystopian stuff, like, you know, The Postman, or even when he starred in Waterworld with Kevin Reynolds and what have you. You know, his work has always been very much earnest. Even something like, you know, Oliver Stone's JFK, like when he played William Garrison, the district attorney and stuff like that. He's very much kind of all-American kind of guy.
Yeah, and I always think he's like a modern-day James Stewart, you know?
Yeah, very true. Yeah, very true. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have the sort of wishy-washiness of James Stewart. He's a bit more kind of like bulky. I mean, I mean in terms of like his presence.
Yeah.
He's more sort of like bulkier on screen, you know? He brings a lot of baggage, I think, is the whole thing of it. Because, you know, like you look at like Dances with Wolves, and that was very much like kind of white savior narrative. And
stuff
like that. And even like, you know, JFK, I mean, you know, to call JFK a complete fiction is putting it mildly. This is on the borders of science fiction. And like we could talk about like conspiracy theories about JFK till the cows come home. But in the case of Horizon American Saga, this is very much in the vein of, you know, John Ford, How the West Was Won, really old school Western in, I would argue, all the wrong ways.
Okay. So what's the basic plot here?
The basic plot of this is that it's set over a course of 15 years pre-American Civil War, and it's sort of intersecting story. So Jenna Malone's character is this woman who is living on a homestead with this scion of a violent criminal family. She kills her husband and goes on the run. They eventually catch up with her. Sienna Miller and her daughter Isabel Furman are the lone survivors of a Native American, I think it's an Apache tribe, attack the town of Horizon. Luke Wilson is this army captain who's leading a band of settlers on their way to Horizon. Kevin Costner is a horse trader who sort of comes in and out of the story. And then, you know, you have, you know, Native American actors playing the Apache tribe that attack Horizon. So it's like there's like four or five different strands of stories going on. But like what kind of really hamstrings Horizon is the fact that, first of all, it's 3 hours long.
Yeah.
You're watching it and it feels like you're watching three episodes back to back of a TV series that will probably only last one season. Number two, it kind of starts in media res. So like a lot of these stories are already halfway through it and you kind of have to catch up as you go along. And then also as well is the fact that, you know, Westerns are a genre that have been constantly reinvented. I mean, you even go to the 70s with Sergio Leone and stuff like that. Like The Good, the Bad and the Ugly was itself a reinvention of, you know, the John Ford Westerns, you know, even the Sam Peckinpah Westerns, you know, that sort of way. Like it was really kind of taking them and turning them on their head. And, you know, while their nostalgia is a powerful force in cinema and stuff like that, you're watching Horizon and you're just slogging through it. And then you think back to something like How the West Was Won, which is the clearest descendant of Horizon. And you're thinking, this was done better and done more succinctly. I mean, yeah, How the West Was Won is nearly 3 hours long, but that was the entire story into one film. This is one of four, and this is 3 hours long. So like, It's the sort of thing if you're like, you can tell the story a lot more cleanly.
And it also sounds like the plot is an amalgamation in terms of plot of plenty of other things we've seen and heard before.
Exactly. And done better and done more cleanly and done more efficiently and done more lucidly, you know, that sort of way. Like, I mean, you could like, I mean, the Jenna Malone's plot, if you like, that was The Homesman with Tommy Lee Jones, a brilliant, brilliant Western. You know, the whole story with Sam Worthington's character, who's this American Union soldier, who sort of like has been, you know, he meets the survivors of Horizon, Sienna Miller's character, for example. And he's sort of like, look, the Native Americans, they own this land. You really shouldn't be here. You were told not to come here, yet you came anyway. I mean, that's Hostiles, as far as I'm concerned, the Scott Cooper film with Christian Bale and Rosamund Pike. So like, yeah, all these kind of different subplots are different films, different Westerns that have been done better. Here they're all just like kind of smushed together and we're expected to try draw, you know, a line through them. And really the line is, you know, survival and adversity are core tenets of the American experience. Yeah, but also like colonialism and murder is also part of the American experience. But you're not showing that. Even when it cuts to the Native Americans, like it feels so pandering. Like it's just giving them a voice so it can kind of tick a box and say, yes, yeah, we have the Native American experience in this, you know?
And so, you know, part of me, because I like Kevin Costner, although he's no stranger to a vanity project or whatever. But before this came out, you know, part of me salutes the fact that here he is, almost in an Orson Welles kind of way, trying to make four movies that chart, you know, the great days of the Wild West and the bad days of the Wild West. But is this just another vanity project?
Well, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? Like, I don't necessarily know if the vanity project, but in saying that, right, in this film, I would argue the most interesting scene, the most well shot, you know, the scene that kind of locked me in was this like 15 minute kind of soliloquy, if you like, with basically Kevin Costner is walking through this sort of logging town on his way to pay a visit to this woman. And this sort of like, you know, black hat character is following him along and kind of chirping at him a little bit and sort of antagonizing him. And then it turns into this really tense standoff. And it's the best scene in the film. And of course, sure enough, Kevin Costner is right bang smack in the middle of it. And, you know, you would imagine, you know, he's all over the posters. He cast his son in it as well. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, he is no stranger to a vanity project. I feel this, to me, though, kind of stinks more of like, this is Kevin Costner's manifesto, you know, that sort of way.
Yeah.
You know, he spent the last 4 years doing Yellowstone, and Taylor Sheridan, I think, has, again, covered this in 1883, clunkily as well, I would imagine. I haven't seen 1883, but everything I've seen of it doesn't fill me with a lot of confidence, you know?
Okay, well, this is disappointing, but you know, you're here to tell us as you see it. So if you had to give Horizon an American Saga Chapter 1, to give it its full title, have I put in, is it An American Saga or The American Saga?
An American Saga.
An American Saga. Simplicity in the title is not his friend, but what would you say stars-wise?
2 out of 5. I found
two out of five.
I really did find this a slog to get through. And again, I love a good Western. You know, Once Upon a Time in the West is one of my favorite films. And I like Kevin Costner. I do like him. I think when he's on screen, he does have a presence. But this just really, it felt like work to get through it, you know?
Okay. And so you're clearly not looking forward to chapters 2, 3, and 4.
I mean, chapter 2 is out in August. And apparently he's in production now with chapter 3. And chapter 4 is still on the way. But I mean, do you know something? If this was a TV show, I'd say fair enough. I could I could kind of bear it a little bit. But 3 hours in a cinema, I mean, and you're not even getting the full picture is tough going, you know?
Yeah. No, well, that's fair enough. That is 2 stars for Horizon, An American Saga, Chapter 1. Let's take a quick clip.
You're not taking the full measure of this, Mary. Think about how far these men just came and how long they've been at it over one old injury. I know the man I met was on his way to kill everyone in that house. He might as well have been walking up to get the mail for all it bothered him. Now they had a second loss and they're this much farther out of their way. Can't imagine they'll be any kinder to you this time.
So they'll just kill me then? Right out in front of everyone?
No, they'll probably take you somewhere quiet, won't they?
A clip there from Horizon and American Saga, Chapter 1, which Brian Lloyd gave 2 stars to. Now, Brian, we have A Quiet Place Day 1, which is a prequel of sorts to the, I would say, rightly lauded A Quiet Place 1 and 2. What's going on in this one?
This is essentially set on the very first day that the alien creatures landed, and they made landfall in New York. This is directed by Michael Sarnowski, who previously did Pig with Nicolas Cage. Lupita Nyong'o is this terminal cancer patient who is living in a hospice just outside of New York. She's brought there by, I think it's Nat Wolff, who people would remember from Hereditary. The alien forces attack. She then has to basically try survive and make her way to Harlem, where she wants to essentially get pizza. There's a pizza place in Harlem that she wants to get to. She's a terminal cancer patient, so she doesn't really have anything except the promise of good pizza. And along the way, she bumps into Joseph Quinn, who people would know from Stranger Things. The two of them band together to try survive and make it to Harlem.
Okay. And this is day one of the invasions, which we kind of were in chapter 3s and 4 of by the time we saw Quiet Place 1 and 2. Now, A Quiet Place 1 and indeed 2, people hailed them, thought they were brilliant, the use of sound and all that kind of stuff. Is it another good day?
It is very, very much so, yeah. And I mean, I think the thing about this as well is the fact that, you know, You do not need to have seen 1 and 2 to get anything what's going on here, because it's laid out so simply. It's essentially the aliens, when they hear noise, they attack, so everyone has to remain quiet. And I think what Michael Sarnowski does in this very well is the fact that, you know, there are rules set up and they are closely adhered to. So if any noise goes off, the aliens can attack. However, if people stand near rain, or if they're kind of under like a babbling brook, or, you know, like a fountain or something like that, they stand near it, they can speak quite low, and they're safe to talk, you know. But more than that, I think, is the fact that, you know, Lupita Nyong'o and Joseph Quinn, I think, are two actors who are really, really gifted in saying everything with their eyes, you know, that sort of way. Mm-hmm. They're really expressive actors, and normally that can kind of be a little bit sort of, sometimes it can be quite hammy and theatrical, but in this, it's done really, really well. Like, because I think, you know, it's that thing of pure cinema that, like, you know, dialogue is just an impediment, and that if you can't tell the story visually, then, you know, you're not really working with anything. And I think that's always the mark of a good film, is that if you turned off the sound and just watched the images and it still makes sense, that's exactly what A Quiet Place Day One is. And again, you know, yes, it does use jump scares, maybe a little bit cheaply in parts, but for the most of it, it's really this emotional journey of, and it's quite bleak. I mean, you know, Lupita Nyong'o's character is terminally ill. She really doesn't have anything to live for, yet she continues on nonetheless. And Joseph Quinn's character is sort of like completely enamored in fear, and he can't seem to kind of move forward without Lupita Nyong'o bringing him along, you know. And it's a really, you know, for a film that's now in it, like I say, it's in its third kind of installment, if you like, I would have thought, okay, how are you going to reinvent the wheel? How are you going to make this new? How are you going to make this different? And the fact that it's set in an urban environment, whereas, you know, A Quiet Place and A Quiet Place Part 2 was set in this beautiful, pastoral, sort of gorgeous, bucolic, you know, countryside here in New York. You know, car alarms are going off every 5 minutes. You know, when they trip over tarmac or something like that, you see the aliens kind of react to it and everything. So there's a lot more sort of sense of threat and atmosphere. But again, the emotional story between Lupita Nyong'o and Joseph Quinn really is the thing you latch onto with this, you know?
Okay. And that thing about the sound where you're talking about, you know, all, so much of the action is done wordlessly. What was so gripping in the first two movies was the fear of noise, that people were being quiet. They're giving sign language to, or they're doing sign language to each other in certain instances. And you're on the edge of your seat. The sound design was so affecting because you were afraid of noise being made, that the aliens would be disturbed. Does it play less into that, or is that still a feature of it?
Oh, no, definitely. No, I mean, that is the film in itself. Yeah. The fact that it's set in New York, there's more chances of something going wrong. That's the thing. You know what I mean?
Okay. It sounds terrific, Dan. And with a sincere emotional heart. So what would you say stars-wise for A Quiet Place Day One?
I think 4 out of 5. It's a very, very well done. And like, if you haven't seen Pig with Nicolas Cage, I mean, it's brilliant. And this is, I think, is fantastically well done as well. I would say, I mean, it's very, very bleak. I mean, it is a very bleak film. Be prepared for that going in. But absolutely recommend it.
Listeners to this show are used to bleakness. I peddle it every other week. So listen, in literally a minute, I'm sorry, Brian, we don't have more time. It's a busy week for movies, but the new Yorgos Lanthimos movie is out, Kinds of Kindness, an absurdist black comedy or something along those lines, with Emma Stone, William Dafoe, all sorts of people.
Yeah, Jesse Plemons, Margaret Qualley, Mamadou Athi. It's essentially three individual stories, and the same actors are carried through each individual story. I mean, I could spend ages trying to explain the plot, but essentially the overall theme of it is about control and fate, which is something that Yorgos has done before. He did it in Killing of a Sacred Deer. I really didn't like this. I'll just say it straight up. Yeah. I did not like this at all. I mean, I know Poor Things was very accessible and people liked it, and, you know, Emma Stone won the Oscar again for it and everything. This is very much, it feels like it was made determinedly abstract and kind of angry and cynical and weird. I mean, that's, you know, Yorgos Lanthimos is, you know, the paragon of the Greek weird wave, and this is very much in that vein. It's not for everybody. I do think some people will go to this and love it, and I think people like myself will go to it and really, really dislike it, and unfortunately, I really, really disliked it.
Yeah, and I was actually one of those people who thought Poor Things was a touch of The Emperor's New Clothes, to be honest. I just found it over-involved and it didn't do it for me. So I probably wouldn't get on too well with this then, would I?
No, I wouldn't think so. I mean, did you like Killing of a Sacred Deer?
Yes, I did. I did a lot. I just thought Poor Things, it was an interesting exercise in cinema making, but I it's not something I have any desire to watch again. And I know it's from Element Pictures, so, you know, it, part of my patriotism, I hate to say that, but I do think he's great and unique, but Poor Things, it just didn't grab me. Like, as I say, I have no real desire to see it again. What would you say stars-wise then for Kinds of Kindness?
Ooh, I'd go 2 out of 5. Like, it's
okay.
I mean, it's... I will say the performances are very committed. I think Willem Dafoe is a really underrated comedic actor. I think Jesse Plemons great as well. But yeah, this is, it's not that it's disturbing and it's not that it's disgusting. It's just purposefully, you know, jagged in a way that isn't really appealing to watch at all. I think.
Okay. But, would it be open to accusations of pretentiousness?
Oh, definitely. Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. Oh,
okay.
I mean, that's kind of...
That's the most resolute you've been in the last 20 minutes.
it is definitely pretentious. Yeah, and I think, you know, it's one of those things that people won't get it. If people don't get it, they'll just say, oh, it's brilliant. Oh, it's fantastic. You gotta go see it. And what's it about? Oh, I don't know, but it's brilliant. I mean, that's always a cop-out to me, and I think this is one of those films.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I don't know what it's about, but it was great. I'm not so sure. But anyway, that is 2 stars for Kinds of Kindness. And it gives Brian or myself no pleasure to say that, because we are fans of Irish cinema, Element Pictures. Brian, thanks a million.
Thanks a lot.
Brian Lloyd there of entertainment.ie, reviewing Kinds of Kindness, A Quiet Place, Day One, and Horizon. An American Saga, Chapter 1. Too long of a title for a movie, if you ask me, or too complicated a title. But I haven't seen it, but Brian Lloyd was not overly impressed. That is it for this week. Thank you, as always, for listening. Next week on the show, talking to Neil Jordan, which I'm delighted about. If you want to get in touch with me at any stage during the week, John_Fardy is my Twitter handle, or you can email me screentime@newstalk.com. I'd love to hear about what you've been watching, about anything. I'm open 24/7 for communication from you,
my loyal and trusted listeners, who often give me good tips on things I might have missed that I should be watching, or the big screen, or indeed the small screen. As I say, that is it for this week. And Beverly Hills Cop, which we were talking a lot about, is out on the 3rd of July on Netflix for your streaming delicatessen. I don't know. You know what I mean? It's been a long show. You can listen back to any of these shows on newstalk.com or the Newstalk app, powered by Go Loud. As I say, thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you all next week.